Well, a big thanks to Taran and the team for driving us into the weekend. It is Friday, July 4th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the official chart show at 7pm, Alan Colley is standing by to preview League of Ireland Premier Division action and chat Women's Euros. Kyle Coney outlines the Joel Kerr tug of war between Tyrone GAA and West Ham United. Ryan O'Dwyer, Brian Carroll and Shane McGrath preview this weekend's All-Ireland Hurling Championship semi-finals. Jane Mangan chats racing while Greg Allen dials in from the Women's Irish Open. So if you want to get in touch, you can text 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Good evening, welcome along to the show. Happy Friday, one and all. Happy Friday, Alan Colley and Ryan O'Dwyer, who are alongside me in studio. Gentlemen, looking forward to a big weekend of sport, big weekend of hurling, I should say, Ryan O'Dwyer.
Yeah, definitely has the potential to be an absolutely cracking weekend with four novel pairings. I suppose the two of the big three on Sunday with Tip against Kilkenny. Used to playing against each other, used to battering each other. And both teams a while since they've had a bit of success, so they're mad for it. And then on Saturday you have the other one of the big three, Cork, against I suppose the team coming from nowhere that have no expectations, but I think probably the rest of the country for once are shouting for a Dublin team.
Doesn't happen often, I can assure you.
I think this weekend, I think, look, for hurling to be doing well in the country, I think you need teams like Dublin, Hurling, Offaly, Wexford, you know, seeing Kildare doing well this year. So it just gives everyone that little bit of hope, and I suppose it's spreading the success around, so it would be great to see Dublin go a step further.
Here's hoping, Ryan. We both say impartially. Big night of League of Ireland action as well, Al, to look forward to.
Absolutely, Shane, yeah. I suppose your team are always in the headlines, really, but even more so with the appointment.
They'll be out of the headlines then. Nobody cares about them. Debbie Nutt's gone.
Well, when you think of last night...
League of Ireland's on its knees again now.
yeah, all that kind of, I suppose, hype and interest around it, that's all going to be gone, is it, Shane? I don't think so. But no. I think it was a good appointment for your team with Joey O'Brien, just in terms of the continuity, because obviously I presume all the management team will stay that was in place already, so I think that's a positive. It's rare that happens when someone does leave or someone gets the sack, so I think that can be the only positive really to come out of the sadness of Damien Duff leaving. Yeah,
well, depends who you ask, is it? It's not all sad. I don't think it's all sad,
really.
So I hear amongst
fans, or
who knows,
people around the club.
It depends who you ask in the
Spill
Talker
the
Park.
Beans, come on,
in the Talker Park vicinity. We will be getting into League of Ireland and hurling very shortly. 51552 is the text number. As a Kilkenny man, we will beat Tipperary and go along and win the All Ireland, guaranteed. Mark my words, as an unnamed texter. So the fighting words are already out. Let's turn our attention to golf and day two of the KPMG Women's Irish Open, because Greg Allen is there for us. And Greg, a surprise leader.
Well, yeah, I suppose you could call her a surprise leader in that she's not a professional, but in many ways, Lottie Wode is a professional in waiting. She is the world's number one ranked amateur. She's also someone who's won the Augusta Women's Amateur. She was 10th in the AIG British Open last year, and she actually played pretty well in the US Open just a few weeks ago, finishing tied for 31st. So Lottie Wode, the 21-year-old from Surrey, adding a round of 67 this morning to her 68 from yesterday, and she's made just one bogey in 36 holes. And considering yesterday's conditions weren't terribly benign, and today it is, as they say in this part of the world, blowing a hoolia there. And this is a very open course in places. It does have areas which are sheltered by trees. In many ways, those areas sheltered by trees are harder to judge the wind in because it swirls. So that round this morning is 67. There were two 67s yesterday, but that one this morning by Lottie Wode is the round of the week so far. So she's on 11 under par. She has now a three-stroke lead over the field, and she was very satisfied but not getting ahead of herself when I spoke to her after her round.
Just played well tee to green, didn't really miss too many greens, so it was pretty stress-free for most of it, just missed a couple at the end, so just kept on hitting the fairways and the greens.
You're the world's number one ranked amateur for a very good reason, and obviously a professional career will eventually probably unfold for you. You're not afraid of this because you've achieved so much being in the lead at halfway.
yeah, it's definitely where I want to be. I want to be in the lead in contention. So yeah, got all the experience that I've kind of had the last couple of years playing in big events, and you know, pro events too is gonna help.
We came to know you really well from winning the Augusta Women's Amateur last year. You went on to finish 10th in the British Open, the AIG British Open. And just recently you had a very good US Open as well. So have you accumulated enough here to feel that you have nothing to fear really against a field of professionals?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, everyone's obviously great players, no matter whether that be in this or even the amateur events we play in. So, you know, I'm just trying to stick to my own game and just see where it puts me.
That's Lottie Woad. She's a very strong player, physically very strong player, hits it very, very well. But also, you can tell there, very composed. Now, she at the moment leads by four, because just as I was speaking there, the Chiara Tamburlini from Switzerland, who was third in the Irish Open last year, dropped a shot on the 17th. And she is now back in the group on 7 under par, tied for second place with Charlie Hull, who shot a 69 this morning, and Australia's Kirsten Rudgley, who shot a 68 this morning. And that trio on 7 under, four behind Lottie Woad. Leona Maguire struggling to make the cut. It looks like falling at 2 over par. She birdied the 10th, but double bogeyed the 11th, but she's just birdied the 14th about half an hour ago, and that leaves her now on 2 over par after 15, which is right on the cut mark. Two other Irish battling to make the weekend action. Kenny Screen, 2 over after a 75. She looks pretty safe on that right now. Anya Donegan, 1 over after 15. But the Ellen Park amateur Emma Fleming is still going quite well, and she's the leading Irish player by far on 3 under par after 9 holes, and she is in the top 20. She opened with 7 straight pars. That was good golf in these conditions. She then double bogeyed the 8th, but she's just birdied the 9th. So 3 under par, tied for 18th place. And as I said, far and away the best Irish woman in the field, 20-year-old Emma Fleming.
Great stuff, Greg. We will be checking back in with Greg before the end of the show. But for now, Greg Allen reporting from Carton House there at the KPMG Women's Irish Open.
Game on. Association football.
We're turning our attention to football. Alan Cawley still with us. Kyle Coney going to be joining us very shortly to chat about that Joel Kerr tug of war, as I mentioned, between Tyrone GA and West Ham United. But some football news, some transfer news. Alan Cawley, Republic of Ireland international Callum O'Dowda has signed for Hungarian champions Ferencváros, where he links up with former Irish teammate Robbie Keane. The left-back has signed for the Budapest club for an undisclosed fee. Cardiff City confirmed the move on their website this afternoon. O'Dowda, who has earned 32 Republic of Ireland caps, has been at Cardiff City since 2022, playing 42 times in last season's championship campaign, which ended in disappointment for Welsh club Cardiff, slipping into League One with Corkman Brian Barry Murphy taking over as manager ahead of the new season. An unusual move for an Irish player.
Very unusual, Shane. But that's not to say it's not a good move. I definitely think, to be fair to the likes of Callum O'Dowda and more players, it's worth trying out something new like that, new experience for them. The fact that Robbie Keane is there as well, and Rory Delap, so obviously there's the links there from when he would have worked with them before with the Irish setup as well. So I'm sure that was a big kind of persuading factor also. And also you have to mention European football as well, Shane, because a lot of these lads that play Championship, League One, they might never get the chance to play in the Champions League or the Europa League or whatever the case may be. So they won the league last year, Ferencváros, so there's European football on offer as well for Callum O'Dowda. So in that regard, you would have to say it's something new, something different, and good luck to him.
Yeah, no, very much so, and hopefully it does work out for Callum O'Dowda and indeed Robbie Keane and Rory Delap. A bit closer to home. Now, I'm banning any Oasis or puns or anything.
What
this
did you
evening.
Make of it?
It's a brilliant. 50% is going to charity, which is a brilliant cause. So it's always good to see.
To be fair to Bo, Shane, I know you're very much in the Shelburne corner. They're smashing it out. They're smashing
it out of the park. 6 and 7 o'clock when I'm on.
They're smashing it out of the park when it comes into the marketing side of things.
They absolutely are. And David Snaid of the 42.ie had an article pretty much stating that in an interview. Daniel Lambert, the Bo's COO, I think, as opposed to CEO, an interview with businessplus.ie in May. Chief Operating Officer, so it's correct, COO, detailing the following: a 2,000 increase in merchandise revenue since 2015. €2 million of their €4.5 million turnover last year came from merchandise, compared to 100 grand in sales back in 2014. The club previously sold an estimated 100 away jerseys per year. They now sell up to 30,000 shirts per year, with ambitions to double that.
It's phenomenal. I had a chat one evening there with Pat Fenlon about it, since Pat has gone in, and obviously all the years of experience that he's been involved in the league, and he said he's never seen anything like it in terms of when they release a jersey, just the interest it creates and garners, and more importantly the revenue that comes in from it. And it's only getting bigger as well, to be fair, Shane. I suppose with the contacts that Daniel has now in the music world as well, when you're pulling the likes of Paul Weller, Oasis on the front of the jersey,
it was a nice promo.
It was good.
It was. It was a nice promo, I have to say. There'll be a few Bose jerseys dotted around the streets of Cardiff this evening.
I think there'll be plenty, yeah.
But if you ask Stephen Kenny, am I an Oasis fan? A few of our family are musicians, so I think they're played in our house a lot. And obviously it's my era growing up. But Stone Roses are better. I'm much more influenced by the Stone Roses than Oasis. But Oasis are good. They're okay. But I prefer the Stone Roses. The battle lines are drawn ahead of the Dublin Arby this evening. <Al. laughs>
They're the quotes. I read them today, yeah. I couldn't tell you anything about the Stone Roses, so
what?
I can't disagree with.
No. Really?
Neil Diamond and Justin Timberlake. I told you this on Monday.
Yeah.
Shit.
In the Venn diagram of music, I don't think Stone Roses.
I'm not the man for the music.
I don't think Ian Brown and the lads there
it's not my
to be
scene.
Going to JT concerts. But however, okay.
It's not my scene. Right. I respect and appreciate all those people, but it's not my scene.
On the field then, under Stephen Kenny's guidance, St. Pat's are on the cusp of another potential European springboard, but Kenny will know more than anyone the importance of season domestic momentum. First, tonight's fixture will be used as a barometer. St. Pat's were now 3-1 winners over their Dublin rivals when the pair last met at Richmond Park in March, and it has been somewhat of a change in fortunes of late for both clubs. Bose could do with a win to really kind of push on in their pursuit of European football, whereas Pats really need something going into Europe.
I think this is most important for St. Pat's and Stephen Kenny rather than Bose. Bose are obviously on an upward curve at the moment since the second series of games, and I watched the game last week against Sligo Rovers as well. They'll be disappointed they didn't pick up the 3 points, but it still keeps them in touch and distance of Shamrock Rovers, where as you look at St. Pat's, and I think Stephen referenced a lot of this in his pre-match press conference as well, along with those quotes about the music, about the 2 weeks that they've just had. And it's been a bit of a disaster for them, really, because they played 5 games in 14 days and they picked up 2 points, 2 draws, the 3 defeats, 3 on the bounce in the middle of that as well, Shane. So it's worrying form, it really is. Plus, they haven't scored a goal as well. They've really struggled to score goals in the last couple of weeks. When you think of Stephen's teams that like to play attacking brand of football, create chances on the front foot, and they were a team that scored plenty of goals in the early part of the season, but they've certainly dried up in recent weeks. So I think this game is far more important for Stephen Kenny than it is for Alan Reynolds. That's not to say it's not important for Bohemians as well, because they'll want to continue that good form that they're on. You look at their last 5 games, they've won 3, drawn 1 and lost 1. So as I said, they'll want to stay in touching distance of Shamrock Rovers, but certainly in terms of the pressure. And
how will they handle that pressure? Because they've looked a bit fragile, is it fair to say?
I think that's very fair to say, yeah. Kind of weak a little bit mentally as well when you look at some of the performances. And Stephen likes to accentuate the positives when he's talking about the games, but you have to be realistic. I'm listening to fans and people who are going to matches every week, and they're giving out stink about it, to be honest with you, Shane, just how toothless they are, and when the going gets tough that they're not able to stand up to the fight. So that can be damning criticism on players as well sometimes, and I think Stephen has to address that and take note of that, because they have to get back. As I said, there's big money, there's a big budget there. There was expectation on them at the start of the season. I mentioned earlier in the season as well, Shane, that it's all good and well, I suppose, towards the end of last season when there's nothing really at stake. They came from so far off the pace that they won. I think it was 8-9 matches, and everybody was saying if they had to win, if the season was extended for another couple of games, they could have potentially won the league. But there was zero pressure on them. It was like a golfer going up the field on a Sunday when he was 6 over par and finishing on 4 under or something. But yet he loses by a shot, but he was never in contention. That's kind of like what it was for St. Pat's last year, whereas everybody started this season and all the bookmakers had them as favourites because of Stephen Kenny being there as well, and because of the finish that they had at the end of last season. And I think that brought an expectation that they just haven't coped well with whatsoever, Shane. And as I said, you look at the performances, the lack of goals, they're sitting in 6th place, 31 points. And it's imperative, I think they can forget about a league title, but it's imperative that they finish in the European places purely because of the finances and what that brings. And as I said, Stephen Kenny's on a big contract himself. There's good resources in terms of the playing pool as well and what they're paying as well. So I think it's a bigger game, as I said at the start, for Stephen Kenny than it is for Bohemians.
Okay, a lot on the line in Shakur. As Owen Doyle outlines in his RT Sport piece, confidence isn't just a nice to have going into Europe, it's a necessity. Strong domestic performances now can be the difference between going into Europe with rhythm or retreating with regrets. Joey O'Brien's Shelburne. This evening isn't about coasting past Cork, it's about control, confidence and coming out unscathed. Both in scoreline and squad fitness, Europe demands full tanks and fit legs. Shells can't afford another injury crisis at this critical point in this season. Is it good to have that
Joey O'Brien news just box off now ahead of this match and indeed ahead of Linfield?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I said even at the top of the show to you there, Shane. I think it's good news for Shelburne, especially because of what's on the horizon with Linfield on Wednesday night. And when someone of the calibre and stature of Damien Duff, obviously in the news that that garnered when he left there last Sunday, there was so much uncertainty around the club because the likelihood is the assistant may go as well, and then the management team and the whole thing can come kind of unstuck really in the space of a few days. So I think in terms of the continuity of Joey sticking around his management team, for the players as well, just having that bit of security around them going into the game on Wednesday, I think that's huge. And they can start looking at the long term then. But I think Joey's been happy with a couple of performances since he stepped in. Obviously they've only drawn the two games, but he was saying they played very well against Waterford.
There's certainly been a marked improvement, but it's the same old
missing chances,
failings. Yeah,
yeah, and that's been a story of the season, to be fair. They have created plenty of chances. I don't think Damien Duff left off the back of bad performances. It was just obviously that they weren't getting the results.
Yeah,
and I think then, as I said, he was obviously getting himself involved in a lot of stuff where the heat came a bit heavy, and maybe that was the reason why he did leave. But certainly in terms of the performances all season, and you've watched a lot of the games, as have I, Shane, the performances have been not too bad. They've just missed so many chances and not been clinical enough. And we all thought when Meepo would come in, he'd be the finishing kind of piece of the jigsaw in that regard, because everybody knew with Sean Boyd that there'd be injuries and in and out of the team, and it just hasn't materialised, which sometimes can be the case. And I think he missed one last week when he went round the keeper as well, and Gary Buckley got back and saved it on the line. That can turn for him as well, but I think the key thing for Shelburne at the moment is that news last night of Joey O'Brien staying. He's had a brilliant career himself, Joey. He's a big figure, maybe not as big as Damien Duff, but as I said, he's a high profile person as well.
Really well respected coach.
Absolutely. People speak highly of him. I'm sure there's a good relationship there with the players and himself as well, so the players will be delighted. And as I said, I think it's good news tonight. If they can get up back to winning ways against Cork City, and you would certainly fancy their chances at home. Cork are really struggling, as we know. And if they can take that confidence into the game Wednesday night, all of a sudden that cloud could lift off Tálaga Park and things could really turn around, Shane, because it's so important that they get through that first game against Linfield. It's not going to be easy. I think I have it down as a 50-50 fixture over the two legs. I really do. I think Linfield are a strong team as well. Whereas last year when it was North v South, Shamrock Rovers were way ahead of Larne and we all felt that going into it. This is very much 50-50. But if they can get back to winning ways tonight, take the confidence into the game on Wednesday, I give them a good chance over the two legs.
A lot on the line on Wednesday, live in RT2 and the RT player from Tálaga Park. Coverage begins at 7:15 for 7:45 kickoff. Drogheda against Galway. How important is it for Drogheda to come away with it? Not only a positive result, but a positive performance, just to try and park the European negativity and even losing James Taylor and so on, to just get a bit of positivity back around the group.
Yeah, it's so important, and it's just been such a tough, people are arguing, is it the worst 2 weeks you've ever seen in the League of Ireland club because of all that's gone on in terms of the missing out in Europe, and then your main man is taken away from under your noses to one of the rivals as well. So yeah, it is, and it's been a struggle mentally more than anything for Kevin, because of the heartbreak, if you like, off the back of such a brilliant season and winning the cup. So that's been difficult to manage. Physically it's been tough as well, because the amount of games as well, because of the European situation, they were like Pats and Shells and Rovers having to play all the games in midweek. So it's been difficult. There's been a few injuries, but I think Kevin will be delighted that he's had a clear week running into this fixture. And the one thing with Drogheda as well, we all know the character and the unity and the spirit that they have. It has been tested, Shane, there's no point in saying otherwise. It has been tested this past couple of weeks. But I also think the fans deserve a mention in Drogheda, because they've been unbelievable for the club in the last 2, 3, 4 years as well. And when you go down to the, I know it's only a small little ground, I'll always call it Hunky Dory Park, but it's
United Park.
It's something
Sullivan and Lamb Park
now. But the fans have been unbelievable, Shane, and I think they'll give them a rousing reception tonight back at home against Galway, who themselves are inconsistent enough, even though they're a tough nut to crack. I think Drogheda could get back to winning ways tonight, and it would be nice to get back on the horse, because you'd hate to see the season being derailed by what's gone on in the last 2 or 3 weeks, when they've done so much good work in the last, I suppose, in all the early weeks of the season.
It won't be easy for Waterford making the trip to second place Derry City, who have come into a very decent run of form. Sligo Rovers, Shamrock Rovers, just before we wrap up a League of Ireland chat. Are you having this? This is your Sligo thing of it's Sligo Rovers against Shamrock. This trying to own the Rovers.
Is that what's being said?
So, yeah.
We'd call them Shams.
Okay. Okay.
In Sligo, but in terms of the fixture,
they're trying to buy the Rovers. This is the Battle of the Rovers. But however, on the pitch,
it would be always Sligo Rovers and Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah. No. Well, that's the thing. Anyway. Not an easy place. Historically, they haven't always picked up full points. The Shamrock of the Rovers.
No, they haven't. It has been difficult for them, despite the fact that they've been so good. I think they lost earlier in the season down there as well, if I'm not mistaken. So, especially as well off the back of, I suppose, if you focus on Sligo Rovers, before the break, Shane, it was such a struggle for them. I felt it was going to be really grim in terms of coming up towards the end of the season, and the only hope I kind of had was how bad Cork were. But since the break, they've really turned things round, and there's a bit of confidence and a bit of momentum down there. Two wins in three, then they went up to Bohemians, rode their luck a little bit, but got a draw last week away from home against a good Bohemians team as well. So as I said, it seems as though they've just turned the corner at the right time, and I would actually be, rather than looking over my shoulder to Cork, because of the good form in the last 3 or 4 weeks since the break, and they've signed well with a couple of good loan signings. James McManus has come in, a good young player from Bohemians. Ryan O'Kane, as you know, Shane, from Shelburne as well. They've offloaded two or three also. So there's a different look to Sligo Rovers at the moment. And as I said, Waterford are in Derry tonight. I don't see them getting anything in Derry. I actually think Sligo Rovers should be focusing on Waterford rather than looking over their shoulder at Cork City. That's not to say you don't take your eye off Cork City, but certainly in terms of looking up the table rather than over their shoulder, I think is a far better mindset for Sligo Rovers at the moment, especially when things seem as though they've turned the corner.
Okay, Women's Euros. You're on a plane to Switzerland after this, Alan.
Straight on. Don't tell anyone.
For Germany, Poland this evening. I can tell you at the moment, 60 minutes played, Sweden lead Denmark by 1-0. Spain had a big win last night. Italy 1-0 winners over Belgium. So in your own match, you'll be covering later for RTE television and the RTE player, Germany, Poland. What are you expecting from this one, Al?
I'm expecting a Germany victory. Right. Germany are very strong going into the game. Their form has been very good. They've actually faced each other in the qualifying campaign as well, and Germany beat them quite comfortably 4-1 and 3-1 away from home and at home. Poland, it's the first time they've ever qualified for the Euros as well, Shane. So obviously there's the novelty effect for them, and there'll be zero expectation in terms of, I suppose, from their own people. But inwardly, they'll be hoping that they can kind of potentially maybe get out of the group, and which would be viewed as huge success. Their star player plays for Barcelona, and she's been involved in, I think, 35 goal involvements this season at club level, 25 goals, 10 assists. So they're pinning a lot of their hopes on them. Something like what you see with the men's team with Lewandowski, it's something similar. So I don't give them much of a chance tonight, but that's not to say I don't give them much of a chance in the group. I think with the other games, as you said, Denmark and Sweden, they may potentially pick up points in that. And so far, we've seen a couple of surprises. They're the only team, along with Finland, that are playing their football in Nations League B to have qualified for the finals. And Finland picked up a result in their first game, winning 1-0. That's the game I covered on Wednesday to beat Iceland. So it's not to say it's beyond the realms of possibility. And the funny thing, and this is a dilemma that we spoke about, Shane, obviously we're covering our own national team. Is it better to be in Nations A and getting hammered, or is it better to be in Nations B winning games and gaining confidence? Here's a Polish team that struggled in the qualifying campaign, went into Nations League B and started winning a load of matches, and now they're going into this on an unbeaten 11 game run where they've won 10 and drawn 1. So all of a sudden they're going into it with a bit of confidence, whereas a lot of the teams in Nations League A can be getting hammered going in and really struggle then in terms of a dent to their confidence. So it's an interesting debate, as I said, with our eyes focused on our national team. But I do give them a chance in the tournament of potentially getting out of the group, but I can't see them beating Germany.
Okay, just before we finish up our football conversation, something a little bit different now, and Kyle Coney joins us on the line as well to chat football as opposed to Gaelic football for once, Kyle. And that is because Tyrone forward Joel Kerr is set to miss the All-Ireland Minor Football Championship final after taking up a professional contract with Premier League club West Ham this week. The London club's academy has denied the exciting Red Hands star permission to face Kerry in Sunday's decider at Newbridge, having signed from Glentoran several months ago. The teenager's contract commenced on July 1st, just 6 days before what would have been the biggest game of his Gaelic football career. Now, there are ongoing conversations, so perhaps there might be an agreement before Sunday. But at the moment, as it stands, Joel Kerr won't be playing in a minor football championship. Now, Kyle, I know you were man of the match in the 2008 All-Ireland Minor Football Final before weeks later going on to play professional AFL with Sydney Swans. So what was your experience like? I know it's different going over to West Ham to the academy there, but there was no arguments in your regard?
Firstly, it was I had interest probably from 2007, so it took place. My contract was signed early 2008, and then I sort of negotiated it where I could stay at home for the All-Ireland series with Tyrone. Now, whenever that, it was sort of just whenever that ended, I would make the trip over to Australia. And lucky enough, from my point of view, it lasted to September. And then, actually, in the meantime, my own club, Ardbeg, was got to the minor final as well, grade one minor final. So I got to stay for that as well a week later, or a couple of weeks later. And then I travelled out. It was actually the start of October before I got. So it was something that they were happy to agree to. It was just whenever I could get finished up with Tyrone and Ardbeg. So it was slightly different from that aspect. There was no sort of set date till, I see, Joel Kerr, the contract commenced on the 1st of July.
Yeah, so the 1st of July, it's a 3-year contract with West Ham, joining up with the new club this week as one of the brightest prospects to emerge from Northern Ireland in recent seasons. So there obviously was an agreement between Glen Torren and Tyrone that he could balance playing association football and Gaelic football in that regard. Kyle, like, how good a prospect is Joel? How highly is he rated?
Yeah, well, look, from a Gaelic point of view, he's definitely highly rated. Like, he's still only 16, so he has next year with Tyrone Minors as well. Hugely influential this year. Scored two cracking points later on against Cavan to get Tyrone over the line in the Ulster Minor Final. And then in the semi-final, scored a crucial goal against Roscommon. So, hugely talented player. And then you can see with sort of that silky left foot and the way that he moved across the ground, you can see that why he's transpired into be a very good winger for Glen Torren. And I see whenever I was reading about him that he had got into the reserve team already at 16. So there must be huge potential there from a soccer point of view. And I've seen actually that there was teams across Europe looking at him and top teams in England. So there must be huge potential there for him.
Yeah, where do you stand on it then? Obviously, as a Tyrone man, you would like to see him play, but should he be given the leeway?
Look, I can see it from both points of view. Put my Tyrone hat on and put my hat on that have been in a similar enough situation. I would absolutely love for him to be playing for Tyrone this weekend. You know, there might never be a chance. He might never play for Tyrone again. He might come back. You know, nobody ever knows that situation, what lies ahead. But from a professional point of view and from a working point of view, you can see West Ham's point of view. He's now under contract. The possibility of injury and a career threatening injury, but just for talk's sake, a cruciate. So, look, I would hope maybe with the talks and the wee bit of glimmer of hope that's out there, that there's talks continuing that he could possibly feature. I know that he has navigated his way through the Glen Torren situation with Tyrone as well, and they have been happy enough. So you would hope that maybe that there would be a wee bit of common ground found and that he could play for one last time this year with Tyrone. But I wouldn't hold out any hope because we know that the soccer world is a cutthroat business. So I wouldn't hold any hope for it. But from a Tyrone point of view, you would be secretly hoping that he could possibly line out in Newbridge on Sunday.
Yeah, Alan Colley, I'm sure you'll have sympathy with young Joel Kerr being in this position. Would you like an agreement in your view? Would you like to see him be able to give that bit of freedom, play the minor football final and then continue your 3-year contract with West Ham?
It doesn't really matter what I think, Shane, to be honest with you. Once he signs the contract, and I think the key thing from Kyle answer there just regarding it, because I would be in agreement with him in terms of the professional aspect of it. Once you sign that contract, he's an asset now for West Ham, so they can't take any risks. But I think the key thing from Kyle's point of view, and we're not privy to the conversations that maybe went on with young Joel and his family or whoever months ago when he was negotiating that contract, but Kyle actually negotiated that if he was to go far with his own county, I think that's what he'd said there, that he was allowed to stay until that was finished. Whether that was negotiated with Joel, it doesn't sound like it was, I'm not so sure. Mm. But whether there was the foresight to see that from far out, thinking Tyrone may get to a minor All-Ireland final, we're not so sure, Shane. But certainly from the professional side of things, and once he signs the contract and football's a serious business, I can totally understand and see West Ham's point of view.
Okay. We will keep an eye on if there is any white smoke and if there is a deal broker between now and Sunday. Should be a cracking minor football final. For now, Kyle Coney, Alan Colley, thanks very much. Enjoy your trip to Switzerland for co-commentary.
Hope the flight's good.
Of Germany, Poland. You have the private jet parked around the corner. No,
don't tell them.
You'll have to get out the car.
Game on. Hurling.
Now, we are looking forward to two semi-finals in the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. Saturday, 5 o'clock, Cork against Dublin. Sunday, 4 o'clock, Kilkenny against Tipperary. I'm joined by Ryan O'Dwyer, Brian Carroll and Shane McGrath to look forward to these two matches. Let us begin with the Sunday fixture, gentlemen, because Kilkenny have been given a big boost as own Cody is set to be available for Sunday semi-final against Tip. Cody missed the Leinster final victory over Galway, having been in prolific form in the Leinster Hurling Championship round robin opening games. Kilkenny will be without Harry Shine and Marty Murphy. Shine, a late sub against Galway, has ruptured his cruciate ligament, while under 24 Murphy, who has yet to make his championship debut, has a hamstring problem. Tipperary are unchanged from their win against Galway. So Shane McGrath, what is it about Kilkenny and Tip? Lay out this rivalry for us.
Sure, they both love each other very much and it'll be all hugs and kisses. And look, I don't know, Shane. I suppose when, even if you're a kind of an armchair hurling fan, if you look back at some of maybe the greatest games of hurling, two of the teams involved in a lot of them were Kilkenny and Tip. And I think that's just the way it was with any of the games I was lucky to be involved in anyway. It was just a fierce rivalry where the border is there. You have fierce hurling strongholds as well, right on the border. Like, you know, even where Liam Cahill is living down in Ballingarry, that's very much on the border. Where Derek Ling is from, Urlingford, that's very much on the border. So they know exactly the rivalry that's there, even the two managers, where they're living. So it's a healthy rivalry. I think people have to realise, I'm often asked, like, do you hate Kilkenny lads? And I absolutely, it couldn't be further from the truth. We just massive respect for them, because, you know, when they go out, that they give it everything. There's no bad word said on the field. It's just, they're intense. They want to win the game. They want to win the ball, but they shake their hands and they have a drink with you after the game. So there's nothing but respect. And the matches, more often than not, Shane, I think, do turn out to be really good games. Albeit maybe the last time Tip and Kilkenny played 2019 final, Tip ended up winning it by a good bit. But I suppose, you know, there was a controversial decision with Richie Hogan sending off, etc. Mm. You know, similar to the Chris Crummy one there in the quarterfinal. So I think that's what gets people going with this fixture, Shane, is that more often than not, 9 times out of 10, this turns out to be a classic game, as it has been maybe over the last, you know, maybe 20 years or so. Like,
yeah, Ryan, Sunday will be Tip's first appearance in an All-Ireland semi-final in this decade and their first game at Croke Park since they overcame Kilkenny in the 2019 All-Ireland final. So how much of a benefit is that to Kilkenny, having Croke Park experience?
Yeah, well, look, I suppose Croke Park, or Kilkenny will play in Croke Park every year, whether it's a Leinster final or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, I think, look, every single one of them have experience in Croke Park. I think it will stand to them. But I think if you look at their path to this stage of the championship, they haven't been tested as much as Tip have, or Cork on the other side of the semi-final. They certainly haven't been tested that much. You look at them, they came through a Leinster campaign where they beat Galway twice quite easily, but in the Leinster final left them back into it, but still won out. They were well ahead of Dublin at half time, left Dublin back into it. So far this year, they haven't finished out a game strong. They haven't hurled for the full 70 minutes, and you'd wonder, will that count against them on Sunday? Whereas you look at Tip, on the other hand, Tip have battled every single game, even the game where it was 14 against 15 for 72 minutes of the game against Cork, which I think was a bit of a farce, but they still fought in that game. Now, I know they were well bet in the end, but they still showed a lot of character. And even against Limerick, they came up, when Limerick were red hot favourites, they came up and ended up getting a draw. And to be honest, Limerick were lucky to get the draw that day. So I think, I certainly think Tip are battle hardened. I think their bench has contributed every single game. You know, I know Sam O'Farrell scored, I think, 1-3 so far this year. Oisín O'Donoghue has come off the bench and scored 2-2 this year. So there's contributions throughout the pitch. that, like there's certainly aspects on both teams that, that there's either going to be matchups or teams that Kilkenny will try target on tip line or tip will try target with Kilkenny. But I certainly think it has the potential to be an absolutely cracking game.
Well, a double barrel question for you, so Brian Carroll. Man for man, who has the better team? And also, where do you see the key matchups?
Man for man, better team has to be Kilkenny in terms of a starting 15. A very experienced team as well, considering that this team is more or less hasn't changed since that All-Ireland, first All-Ireland defeat to Limerick a couple of years ago. So, you know, they have massive experience. And when you see Owen Cody come back into that forward line, you have to say, like, it's a serious forward line. When you have him, Adrian Mullen, Martin Keown in arguably hurler of the year territory at the moment, TJ Reid, you know, so like they have a serious team. So, but on the flip of that, and Ryan has referred to it, the tip bench, like tip arguably have one of the strongest benches, definitely one to match Cork in terms of what's coming in. And the one man he didn't mention was the great Noel McGrath, obviously, coming in and pulling the strings of 20 minutes to go. So, you know, what an asset to be bringing in. He's mentioned young Oisín O'Donoghue, who's coming up through the ranks of Tipperary, fabulous hurler. You know, Alan Tynan's not starting either, who would have been seen as a shoe-in over the last couple of years, but was out with a hamstring injury, you know, lost his place then. And, you know, he's a very experienced and tough player to be bringing in, you know, coming down the home stretch as well. So I think Kilkenny will have their eyes wide open based off, obviously, getting schooled in Nolan Park earlier this year when there was a lot of argy-bargy and a couple of sends off. You know, Kilkenny lost their discipline that day, certainly. But, you know, if you go back even to last year's All-Ireland semi-final where Kilkenny looked imperious in that first half against Clare, but they got completely turned over in that second half. No one in the ground could have seen that happening, bar maybe the Clare players themselves. So, you know, Kilkenny, that experience them, I think, will stand to them really, really well. But you talk about individual matchups. I think, you know, that Tipperary full back line, I suppose the fact that they're able to rotate so much, Mikey Breen, Owen Connolly going back there has been a real trump card. Obviously, he plays most of his club hurling at centre back, but he's able to, you know, play anywhere almost. And Robert Dial has probably been the find of the season at corner back. Obviously, coming up through the ranks too, but, you know, excellent. You know, probably reeling that Shane Barrett type of a mould. But how they'll stack up against that Kilkenny forward line, you know, full forward line in particular, obviously, you know, that to me is where this battle could be won and lost.
Shane, you outlined in your RT Sport Online piece that Tip have been really tested both physically and mentally in their games against Limerick and Clare compared to Kilkenny's more breezy route to the penultimate stage. So who are better set in that regard, perhaps mentally and indeed physically conditioned, or does it mean that much when it just comes to a last four clash?
I don't think it means that much when Kilkenny are involved, because just when it comes to semi-finals, more often than not, they always turn up to perform. They just, you know, they were a bad half of hurling, Shane, away from being in the All-Ireland final last year. If you think about it, like, they dominated the first half against Clare. So that's always what you're going to get with Kilkenny. I'm sure the lads would agree there that when Kilkenny in semi-finals, they always perform. Our tip are more, maybe they've been tested more mentally, maybe, in regards, as Ryan said there. Like, that day down at Clare, if you weren't actually there, it was hard to kind of explain to people maybe how much of a victory that was, because Shane O'Donnell had come on the field, Tony Kelly had scored a penalty, the wind was with Clare, the crowd was with Clare, everything was with Clare. And then Tip just still went up and they got the few scores, and it just showed a great mental fortitude from the group and the lads that came off the bench. And I just think that was a massive, massive moment for the group to show that where they're at, like, and how mature they've become. Because a lot of us in Tip, Shane, we would have probably expected this group to push on, especially the younger lads, but we probably wouldn't expect it for another year or two, to be totally honest. But they've come in, they're the backbone of the 20s winning an All-Ireland team, and they've come in and they've just taken it like ducks to water in terms of championship hurling at top level. So I think Tip have been tested more, but Kilkenny have been tested through no fault of their own. Like, they just are the best team in Leinster and have been for some time now. Six Leinsters in a row. They're very much a home at Croke Park. They're very used to it. I think it's advantaged them in terms of the experience they have in Croke Park. Because, look, Shane, to be honest, like, and the boys will tell you, Croke Park plays differently to every other stadium in the country. If it's windy outside Croke Park, there's a different kind of a breeze blowing in because of the way the stadium catches it. If you're on the 65 in Croke Park, it does feel like you're 80 or 85 yards away because of the stadium, the way it plays. The sideline, the bottom of the stands are in close to you. There's almost like, it almost kind of tears off the effect of the pitch. And it's just different to every other place you'll play in. And for me, I feel you do need a game or two to get used to that and used to the stadium and the way it plays, the way the breeze comes in over the hill, the way the breeze goes in around the Davenant. And that's where I think Kilkenny do have a big advantage in terms of the experience they have of playing there, winning there, and playing there in front of big, big crowds. And there will be a fine crowd. You won't get the same crowd as there is Saturday, but you probably will get 50, 55,000 people at this game. And I do think it's advantage Kilkenny in terms of that. But in terms of being tested, yeah, definitely Tip have been tested and will be advantage to them in terms of the test that they've had in the Munster Championship. Not in the All-Ireland Series, because Laois was a non-runner and the Galway game was probably one of the most boring championship matches I was ever at in my life.
I will be going around for quick-fire predictions off the tree, but Ryan, against Limerick, Dublin served up probably the biggest hurling upset in 50 years. They played with pride, passion and work rate for each other. That was worth 10 years of trying to develop hurling in the capital. Can they go to the well again?
See, right, I suppose I did a comparison and it goes back to the Cork-Limerick game, right? When Limerick beat Cork by 16 points and then it came to the Munster final and it was a case of, oh geez, Limerick or Cork will win, Limerick will never make up, bridge that 16-point gap. And my response was that to Limerick won't play at the same level because they were just they played above themselves that day. They were just awesome every bounce of the ball. But also Cork won't play as bad again, right? We could say that about this weekend. Can Dublin reach the heights that they played in the quarter final after being down a man? Like, you couldn't have wrote that. Like, after being down a man for 50 minutes of the game, and not just any player, like their leader, both as a character and as a hurler, and just that drive that he brings to the dressing room. I know I'm speaking from experience there with that because I've seen him firsthand, but like a real leader, losing him but still pulled it out of bag, and even coming towards the end of the game, they were still winning the race to every single ball. Can they play at that level again? I think they can because they play as a unit. There's no individuals there. They play as a unit. I think they can reach that level again. But it's kind of a case of Cork. What kind of Cork are going to come to the party on Saturday? They played unreal in the Munster final, but are they going to hit those heights again? Will that 4-week break, will that count against them, or will it be for them that they were able to get bodies right? Will it count against them that they couldn't play any matches because every other team that is in the championship they could have come up against it as well? So it is all internal games. So there's a lot going to ride on the first 7-8 minutes of this game. If Dublin can withstand a barrage of goal attempts that I think Cork are going to bring in the first few minutes, I think it's going to be a competitive game throughout.
Okay, Brian Carroll, Pat Ryan doesn't believe in dummy teams, very honest, named his team midweek. I know Dublin haven't been even doing any media, to be fair. Like, can Dublin go and actually win this game, knock out the best team in the country this year, or what are we going to see from Cork?
I think it's very hard for them to go and repeat that, to be fair. Like, Limerick, very disappointed with their own performance, obviously. Dublin and Dublin were full value for it in terms of their work rate, their scoring opportunities, their scoring execution, all those basic stats. But they won all of them, and fair play to Dublin, they were fantastic. But I think forewarned is forearmed for Cork. You know, I think... You know, they'll have the ability to pick off points from out in the middle of the field. They're running game out there, but they need their backs to be more assertive from a Cork perspective. You know, to have Rob Downey back now, again, we talk about spiritual leaders. I think he's been absolutely fantastic for Cork over the last number of years, and he brings that bit of fight that Cork badly are missing, or have been missing, I suppose, over a number of years. But he certainly brings it. And when he's at his best, I think Cork tend to be at their best too. And alongside Kieran Joyce and Mark Coleman, I think they need to be really assertive there. Because we know, like, Dublin have brought a huge amount of variety to their game in terms of, yes, they were a bit of a running team over the years, but now with John Heatherton obviously able to come in off the bench, being able to go long to him, long to Ronan Hayes, they're now adding that, I suppose, not just a plan B, but, you know, really keeping things, teams honest. And, you know, they're the ones that are scoring a lot of goals themselves. Dublin have averaged 3 goals a game, you know, and that's against Kilkenny, against Galway, against Wexford, all these teams, like, they've been so good at it. So Dublin probably also have the athleticism that's able to match Cork. They're probably one of the only teams that are out there that are able to actually do that. But to come down the road and put those performances back to back and actually turn over Cork, it's still very hard to see it. You would have to say that this Cork team are probably, that little bit on their own journey now the last couple of years, that they're chasing that elusive All-Ireland, 20 years now in the making, but there seems to be that little bit of maturity about this team, and they obviously have an outrageous full forward line themselves. We talked about the Kilkenny one, but this Cork one obviously is imperious. Brian Hayes, another, forward inside it. 3-7 I think he has to date in the championship. Like, he can win it high and low. They probably need a better return from Alan Connolly. I think Patrick Horgan will always chip in with these couple of scores, but Alan Connolly probably needs to hit the heights that he's capable of as well.
Okay, gentlemen, it is prediction time. Shane, I'm going to come to you first, then Brian, then Ryan. So I've given you all plenty of time here now to think about it. So Shane McGrath, I come to you first. Who is going to be competing in this year's All-Ireland Hurling Final?
Cork and Tip.
Cork and Tip. It's as simple as that. Cork and Tip. Brian Carroll.
There you go.
I'm going to go Cork and Kilkenny. I'm going to keep these two Tip boys honest.
Someone has to, Brian. Someone has to. Ryan O'Dwyer. You've a bit of an oar in both camps, I suppose. But who's going to win?
if I say it my heart, I'd say Dublin Tip. But if my head is ruling it, I'm going to say Cork and Tipperary.
Okay. Brilliant stuff. Ryan O'Dwyer, Brian Carroll and Shane McGrath, thank you all very much. Enjoy the weekend of hurling. We're taking a short break and then we are returning with Greg Allen and Jane Mangan.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, Greg Allen joins us, and we were chatting about golf because Greg is at the Women's Irish Open. However, our attention is going to turn to athletics because some very sad news. Ciara McGeen has just announced via her Instagram page a statement that reads, "To everyone who's been part of my journey so far, I have some difficult news to share. I've been diagnosed with cancer. It's been a lot to take in, but I've already started treatment and I'm incredibly grateful to be surrounded by the love and support of my family and close friends. Right now, my focus is on healing and taking things one day at a time. I kindly ask that you respect my privacy and that of my loved ones as we move through this together. Your understanding means more than I can say. Thank you for the love and strength. I'm ready to face this with the same fight I've always brought to the track." Greg Allen, obviously golf and athletics reporter with RTE, you've known Ciara for quite some time. You've covered many of her races. You've interviewed her on numerous occasions. Just really shocking news to be breaking really at this time. And as she mentioned there, she is going to come out this all guns blazing.
Look, it's really difficult news, I think, to absorb, and you can only have your best thoughts, and your heart goes out to the fight that she has ahead of her. To be diagnosed with cancer at 33 years of age, when she actually is still in the height of her career, she's not on a downturn. She's the reigning European champion. You know, I'm thinking right now, like, the only race in her mind right now, and she's had so many big races to prepare for in her life, you know, whether it's World Junior Championship, silver medals 15 years ago, all the way to her European Championship gold medal last year. The only race in her mind right now is the race to achieve the best scenario and prognosis that her medical team have laid out for her. And I know of absolutely no one more determined and spirited to be ready for such a tough fight for her health. You can't train for this kind of challenge. But the discipline of her athletic preparation and, you know, what she's been through in her career, fighting back through, in some cases, near career-ending injuries. She had one injury early on in her career, which lasted for two and a half years. After being one of the world's best juniors, she fought back from ground zero all the way to become not just a European champion, but fourth in the World Championships. And one of the most loved athletes, I think, in the history of the sport, because she just is one of those people who you wish well for. She's such a brilliant communicator. She's a qualified physiotherapist, so her own medical knowledge is considerable. And she has a wonderful family supporting her. Her mother, Catherine, is very like Ciara, really personable, bubbly and sociable. Her father, Chris, she got her camogie talent from her father, Chris. He played down for hurling. I know her family. I know quite a few of her friends. Her fiancé, Thomas, would be the rock, I think, supporting her in this in many, many ways, because they only got engaged recently. They're together 10 years. And I know Thomas is one of those quiet people in the background that she's lent on extremely heavily over the years. And she'll be leaning on him now for sure in what is obviously the toughest race of her life.
Yeah, no doubt. We're going to stick with you, Greg, until the end of the show, if that's okay. Just again, without knowing her personally, just that infectious positivity that even comes through the mic on radio interviews or comes through the television when you're watching her speak is just incredible.
Yeah, Kira is one of Kira is one of a kind. You know, she touches people around her.
No doubt she does, and she will continue to do that. And she's been a great representative of the sport. She's been a great representative for Ireland, and given all that she has achieved and that she's overcome in recent years as well, that she is just a shining light for Irish sport. And we've spoken before, and again, it exudes in interviews that she encourages young boys, young girls to pick up running, to take up any sport, to be who you want to be and to be able to compete at a top level, which is just a remarkable character trait to have as a human, Greg.
Yeah, as I said, like, she communicates brilliantly. And by doing that, she, you know, is an inspiration, not just like to adults, but, you know, I've seen her like at athletics meets, like the Morton Games, when she's run in Ireland or at national championships. She's like a Pied Piper. Kids love her because she doesn't just sign an autograph. She stops and she talks and she has a word with every single one of them, makes them feel completely like they're part of her journey. Like, she's had such an incredible career in terms of ups and downs. I mentioned the 2 years out with injury. She also, of course, lost her former coach, Jerry Kiernan. Like, Jerry, remember Kira telling me that when she went to Jerry after having that injury when she was 20, 21, 22, and she went to Jerry and said, "Do you take on hopeless cases?" Because she had literally gone all the way back to ground zero in her career, having been one of the world's best junior athletes. And she's so humble. Her joy when she wins, if you ever see the victory photograph of her bursting across the line at the European Championships last year, when she got through against two British athletes who were in a roadblock in front of her, and she found a gap and she burst through, just look at the picture of her arms up and splayed in the air as she crosses the line with, you know, the final, you know, I suppose, validation of all the work that she had done to come back from really serious injuries. And she's currently also recovering from a really serious injury, which nearly, you know, ended her career. It forced her out of the Olympic Games last September in Paris, or August, I should say, in Paris. And she was going to hopefully get back for the World Championships this September in Tokyo. But that obviously went off kilter a little bit because the surgery and the complications after surgery were so, you know, obviously difficult to get through with a, you know, a deadline of trying to make the World Championships in September. She didn't make that deadline, so it was clear that she was going to focus on defending her European title next year. But as I said, now she's in the race of her life, or the race for her life, and like anybody with a cancer diagnosis like her will be, you know, obviously reeling at the moment. But as I said, I know nobody stronger mentally and certainly with the family and friends around her to take on this challenge that's ahead of her.
Greg Allen, thank you for those words, and thank you for joining us here on Game On. That is all we have time for, unfortunately ending on a very sad and sudden news. And we absolutely wish Kira McGeehan all the very best from everyone in 2FM, RT Sport, everyone at Game On. And we just wish her all the love and affection in the world as well. The official chart show with Blanna Tracy is up next. We are going to take an ad break, and then we're going to check in with the news desk. Have a great weekend from everyone here at Game On.